Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. James, let's begin just like we did last week with the latest round of the greatest emotional con game going, the one where every 4, 6, or 8 years the Democrats and Republicrats switch places. It's funny how that happens. So, James, let's look at U.S. midterm selection fallout, and let's start with the good. Marijuana legalization passes in Oregon and Washington, D.C. as well. James, we knew this was going to come someday, and it probably hasn't sunk into me yet, but it's only right and fair and true and natural that people not be locked up for using a plant. And perhaps the best part, which I didn't really know because no one's really talking about it, this measure, it was Measure 91 here in Oregon, also permits Oregon farmers to grow industrial hemp, which can be used to make food, oil, cloth, rope, and on and on and on. So that's definitely an even better upside to, of course, the easy thing of saying, oh yeah, everybody gets to smoke pot. But if we can actually make products, then we're actually affecting real change in the real world. So the other side, James, the Oregon GMO food labeling ballot measure 92 appears to not pass. And this is what we led last week's New World Next Week episode on. And as we discussed last week, this was the most expensive ballot measure in Oregon history, with 100% of the no funding coming from out-of-state multinational corporations like Monsanto, Dow, Coke, and Kraft. But as I talk to you right now, there are still some maybe 13,000 votes yet to count, and even my county here, Multnomah County, has scored an extra 20-some thousand yes votes just in the last few hours, meaning the votes still to be counted are coming from the most likely to be voting yes areas, so it might, could, maybe, hopefully squeak by, but we'll see. Another interesting note is that a lot of sort of progressive ballot measures around the country sort of offer the counter to the fake conservatives taking over. And an interesting couple of notes from my home state of West Virginia. As the GOP picks up the Senate, Shelley Moore Capito becomes the first GOP senator from West Virginia in nearly 50 years and the first female senator in West Virginia history. Alongside that, 18-year-old Sarah Blair easily wins election to the West Virginia House of Delegates. She's now the youngest delegate in West Virginia history and currently the youngest lawmaker in America. Another couple of interesting notes, James, that were running down the selection updates. Cocaine was found on a ship owned by he's now the majority leader, Mitch McConnell's father-in-law. No one's talked about that. And an interesting bit from our man Brock West, 1.8 million voters are dead, and other facts you didn't know about vote fraud. James?
Well, some interesting stories there, so I hope people will go through the show notes and check them out. But, I mean, do I really have to go through my take on elections in general? I'm sure people will know by now, but of course there's always new people tuning in. So yes, it is fork versus spoon, red versus blue, left versus right. It is a mostly meaningless charade in a lot of different ways. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm not exactly excited about this. I don't really care either way. It's just a different face of the same ruling party. So off with one hat, on with the other. Don't blame me. I voted for Kodos. Well, having said that, though, I mean, things like the ballot initiatives can be important, including, of course, this 92. Now, was that legalization of marijuana or decriminalization?
91 is actually the decriminalization and legalization of marijuana. It's the legalization of recreational marijuana. So Washington and Colorado did it first. Now Oregon's the third and D.C. is the fourth.
Well, there you go. Steps in the right direction for personal liberty. And as you say, the industrial hemp angle on this, exceptionally important because, of course, this is one of the reasons that marijuana has been outlawed for so long, because it does cut into a lot of industrial activities that otherwise get a boon because hemp is outlawed. So that is important. We will keep our eye on that, obviously. And congratulations to the people of Oregon joining the hippie states. all right, but on that note, I got an interesting email in from a listener, Steve, who notes that in Florida, you have a couple of interesting stories. For example, one from the Orlando Weekly, Las Vegas casino owner Sheldon Adelson is bankrolling Florida campaign against medical marijuana, which is interesting to contrast with the New York Daily News article from last year. Sheldon Adelson sans casino to pay $47 million fine for failing to report deposits from alleged drug trafficking. Parker. So we have a drug money launderer helping to bankroll the measure against medical marijuana in Florida. I wonder why. Is it because that represents the big cut into the profits of the people who stand to benefit from the outlawing, the criminalization of the use of these chemicals and drugs? Yes, of course. So this is good. Again, it's a step in the right direction and helps to break the monopoly. Of course, now we have to work towards decriminalization of other drugs, not for the purpose of spreading them or hoping that people will get addicted to them, but so that we can treat people who are addicted to them as addicts rather than convicts and stop putting our money in the hands of the Cocaine Importation Agency, the CIA, which has monopolized the running of drugs into the country. So again, this is a step in the right direction, but overall, Republicrats, Democrats, who gives a flying something or other? I certainly don't.
Bush, Clinton, 2016, woohoo!
Yeah.
James, let's look internationally for our second story this week, as Israeli ministers pass bill jailing stone throwers for 20 years. We grab this from RT. Government ministers in Israel have voted to increase penalties tenfold on people convicted of throwing stones at vehicles from 2 to 20 years. This is a move designed to deal with a wave of violence that's hit some of Jerusalem's Arab districts. If Israeli courts can prove that someone threw a stone with the intent of causing serious bodily harm, they get to impose this new 20-year sentence. The law would also allow the conviction of people who hurl rocks at police cars or police officers with the aim of hindering them from carrying out their duty. If intent to cause harm can't be proven, then the amendments still allow for 10-year sentence, a hefty 10-year sentence, if the safety of a person or a vehicle is endangered. At the moment, such crimes have a maximum penalty of 2 years. A new policy that's been in place since July and applies to minors as well as adults means that Palestinians are being held in custody from the time they are arrested until the end of proceedings. That kind of sounds like indefinite detention to me. There are also minor clashes in the West Bank after last Friday's prayers. However, the West Bank would not be subject to this new legislation, as it's effectively ruled by the Israeli military. James, there are other bits to throw back in this and actually a fascinating investigation from Al Jazeera. But I'll close out the segment with that because I want to throw this back to you as we're basically kind of talking about Israeli terror versus Palestinian terror.
Well, that's exactly the point. And again, you look at this 20 years for throwing stones at police officers in Jerusalem. But contrast that with a recent report that just came out, was covered by The Independent, saying that the airstrikes on Gaza could be war crimes. Gee, do you think 1,523 civilians, 2,192 Palestinians overall dead in that reign of terror that we saw earlier this summer, and there could have been war crimes in there, do you think? The targeting of civilians and civilian populations, that was, again, I mean, it just goes to show the contrast between the two sides here, and it's a bit like saying, well, that man came after me with a fluffy pillow, I better shoot him between the eyes. So, and again, the double standards continue, because of course the Zionist side of this always considers Israeli life to be worth more than Palestinian life, period, end of story. And this is seen time and time and time and time and time again, but some recent examples of that phenomenon. There's a Reddit's conspiracy subreddit post about world news on Reddit. The World News subreddit removed a submission about 11-year-old disabled Palestinian being blindfolded and detained by the IDF in Palestine because they don't allow local crime stories. Yeah, and well, of course, that's not really news. But contrast that to something like the BBC covering breathlessly this new Jerusalem attack of a Palestinian targeting an Israeli and by running him over with a white van, and this is the newest wave of terror, which they happen to note halfway down the story is due to the fact that the Israelis are cracking down once again on access to the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound and increasing settlement expansion, which is why Jordan is now pulling their ambassador from Tel Aviv. And contrast that, for example, with a story that just happened a couple of weeks ago that you can find on the Middle East Monitor, but you will never see on BBC News. Jewish settler runs over two Palestinian children in the West Bank, killing one. So again, if a Jewish a settler does it to a Palestinian child, who cares? If an Israeli gets killed by a Palestinian, though, major international story must be covered by the BBC. Unfortunately, these double standards continue. And on the note of Israeli terror, that brings up the related story that you were going to talk about from the Al Jazeera report.
Al Jazeera investigation: Israel knowingly attacked U.S. military ship in 1967. James, a lot of folks out there are probably, or they're not, should be familiar with the story of the USS Liberty. For folks of us who have been involved in alternative media, this is one of the sort of the bedrock stories that sort of exposes a lot of the official story of this entire sort of world and shell game that we're told about. What's fascinating about this, they have a new documentary called The Day Israel Attacked America. It is up on YouTube. I don't know if it'll stay there forever, so grab that link and grab the video down. Two parts make this interesting, James. They have two exclusive bits. They've got new audio tapes from Israeli jets proving Israel identified the USS Liberty as an American ship before they attacked it. And the second one, it's the first revelation of a network of pro-Israel agents inside LBJ's administration, identified in declassified Israeli documents by their code names, who fed secret info back to Jerusalem and worked to sway LBJ to cover up the attack on the Liberty. And that would be another mission accomplished, James.
Unfortunately, so again, this is not surprising. I think we all knew all of this already, but it's good to have the confirmation and the declassified documents and the actual audio of the tapes so that we can finally lay this to rest. Yes, that was an Israeli terror attack on the United States that was covered up by agents within the LBJ administration. Case closed. Another case of Israel terror being covered up by America.
Now, for our third and final story this week, James, let's turn to an op-ed piece, I suppose, if we could call it that, originally published in the Financial Times, FT.com, which has a pretty hefty paywall. And again, I would always implore folks out there, save articles, screen grab, do what you got to do, because you never know when things are going to be removed. Is the new GCHQ boss afraid of the World Wide Web? His name's Robert Hannigan, and the op-ed he wrote, James, is called "The Web is a Terrorist Command and Control Network of Choice." In a lot of ways, shining more light than perhaps they mean to. But he writes, "The Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, ISIS, is the first terrorist group whose members have grown up on the internet. They're exploiting the power of the web to create a jihadi threat with near global reach. The challenge to governments and their intel agencies is huge, and it can only be met with greater cooperation from technology companies. Terrorists have long made use of the internet, but ISIS's approach is different in two important areas. Where Al-Qaeda and its affiliates saw the internet as a place to disseminate material anonymously or meet in dark spaces, ISIS has embraced the web as a noisy channel in which to promote itself, intimidate people, and radicalize new recruits. To those of us who have to tackle the depressing end of human behavior on the internet, it can seem that some technology companies are in denial about its misuse. I suspect most ordinary users of the internet are ahead of them," the IP IT companies. "Ordinary users have strong views on the ethics of companies, whether on taxation, child protection, or privacy. They do not want the media platforms they use with their friends and family to facilitate murder and child abuse. I think those customers would be comfortable with a better, more sustainable relationship between the agencies and the technology companies. As we celebrate the 25th anniversary of the spectacular creation that is the World Wide Web, we need a new deal between democratic governments and the technology companies in the area of protecting our citizens. It should be a deal rooted in the democratic values we share. That means addressing some uncomfortable truths. Better to do it now than in the aftermath of greater violence." That's how he ends his op-ed, to basically say, almost with a wink, a nod, a threat, there's going to be greater violence, at which point we will shove draconian new laws down your throat. So you can just acquiesce and give a little bit up now, or pick it later. That seems to be what he's saying, James.
That's pretty much it. And again, just to clarify for people who didn't catch it, this is the head of GCHQ, the British NSA. So once again, it is the cyber terrorist speaking to us. This is the person who holds the gun to the head of the internet as we've known it and wants to clamp down even more, because that's ultimately the agenda. And this is just part of a trail of clues that have laid it out for anyone who was oblivious to this fact, that the long-term agenda is to turn the internet into a completely controlled system where you have to thumb scan or whatever it is to get access, and there's not going to be any pretense of anonymity anymore, even if there was really not much chance of that before. There's going to be really no chance of it in the future, and the vision of the internet that they want to bring into view is one that is, again, completely controlled. What you can post, where you can post it, on pre-approved sites or something like a YouTube-type system, where if they don't like what you say, they take your content down and there's nothing you can do about it. So that's the vision of the future of the web. I'm going to actually write an article for my subscriber newsletter this weekend connecting some of those dots. So once again, if you'd like to subscribe to the Corbett Report, you can get that newsletter, and I'll put in all the links to all the various stories, all the cookie crumbs leading down this trail towards the future of the web, which is a dark future, again, unless we fight for this. And what's the best way to fight for it? Again, build up the alternative infrastructure, the pirate internet that we've talked about here and that I've covered on my podcast.
James, in closing on this episode 211, New World Next Week, let's quickly glance at some of the New World Next Week updates that some of our fine friends use on Twitter, hashtag New World Next Week. And it's our usual awesome suspects of Brock West and G.J. Salisbury and also David Ewart IV. But James, as I come to you right now, it is still remember the 5th of November, anonymous protest in London on bonfire night, as the latest I've seen, even from RT, tense Guy Fawkes Day standoff between Million Mask March protesters and police in London. So that's presently going on. Some of the other things we're looking at: number of global billionaires has doubled since the financial crisis. That's coming from The Independent. Secret file on establishment pedophiles may be opened as part of UK inquiry. Trilateral Commission had a sneaky quiet meeting in Serbia. And Facebook admits government requests for user data has gone up 24% in just the last 6 months. James, that's just some of the stuff we try and track for you on New World Next Week, and again, using our own sites and using hashtag New World Next Week to try and keep up with as much as we can and do it open source for everybody.
That's right. And speaking of 5th of November and Guy Fawkes Day, I find it quite ironic that most people today only know Guy Fawkes from V for Vendetta and don't really know anything about that history. But when you look into it, it was actually a false flag event puppeteered by Robert Cecil. So I did talk about that, in fact, in a recent interview with The Last Defense. I'll put that in the show notes so you can go and listen to that interview. And I think that's it for us this week. James, thanks again for your stories.
Thanks so much, man.